Well, welcome to another edition of our Outside View. Today I am speaking with Janae Cummings, and she is a director of communication and marketing at Indiana University here in Bloomington. And she also has a kind of a co-anchor of a radio show on WFIU here in Bloomington. And she does a lot of things. She's very busy. I noticed on Facebook and other places that she kind of throws her hat in a ring on a lot of issues. So welcome to our Outside View, Janae.
Well, thank you.
It's so nice to speak with you. It's nice to meet you, too, in person rather than just electronically.
Sure.
First of all, let's talk a little bit about what you do at IU.
I am the Director of Communications and Marketing at the Hamilton Luger School of Global and International Studies. So I oversee the strategy and execution of all internal and external communications at the school, as well as all internal and external marketing on campus, across the country and around the world for the school.
That is a really big job.
It's a huge job.
That's probably an understatement, but I remember my years at IU and working with at least a department that was similar to that. Now, when we wanted to do things as far as having logo approval and things like that, I had to communicate with people. Of course, none of those people work there now. You see, I'm really old, and everybody's gone. When I look at the list of the roster of people that work at IU now, I don't know anybody. It's kind of a funny feeling, but. So how long have you been at IU or doing this job?
I am in my eighth year at IU. I've been in this position for about 6 months.
Ah, all new. So you're learning everything. I think you're in a new building, too.
I am. Well, I mean, it's probably been around for 4 or 5 years, the Global and International Studies building.
So. Isn't that where African Studies is now? Because that's
Yes. The
last program I was with when
Yes.
I retired here.
Mm-hmm. Nearly all, I would say, cultural area studies are in the building, as well as most language studies are in the building, as well as foreign policy, diplomacy, those kinds of things are also located in the building.
And what do you do with radio on WFIU?
I am a host for WFIU Profiles, which is a weekly show interviewing scholars, artists, filmmakers, writers, people who visit campus quite often, usually guests in the university or people who are coming through town. And so it's an hour-long show to get to know people, you know, the kind of stories behind their work. If it's a filmmaker, for instance, you know, talking about those films, but maybe inspiration and, you know, how they became the director that they are and focusing on the things
Sure.
that they do. So getting to know people beyond beyond the limited scope of their focus.
That's something that I find really interesting, which is why I like to talk with people. And in some cases interview them, but in other cases just have a good conversation about what people are doing, because people are interesting. You know, people have come in and they wear one hat,
sure.
but they do multiple things and have multiple talents.
Yeah.
And frequently we don't know all those things. I know that one major thing you want to talk about today, and it is exciting, is the Pride Film Festival, which I believe you're president of Bloomington Pride.
I am the chair of the board of directors
Oh, okay.
for Bloomington Pride. I guess you could call it a president, but I'm not.
That's okay.
It's not the title that I have. So.
And how long have you been involved with Bloomington Pride?
I have been involved with Bloomington Pride for 3 years. I've been the chair for two.
Two. Are you from Indiana, from Bloomington?
No, I am from Indiana. I'm from a little northeast of Indianapolis, a town called Anderson.
Oh, Anderson. I've heard of Anderson, actually. So what drew you to, I suppose you volunteered for Bloomington Pride first.
I did. I was recruited in some ways by members of the board to join the board. But I was interested in part because I didn't see anyone on the board who looked like or perhaps identified in the way that I did, and I didn't see anyone who was speaking for me, and so I thought that was important.
I think you find that a lot in Bloomington.
Absolutely.
I found that too. Now, I may not look exactly like you, but I'm not from here, and I certainly have felt my degrees of alienation, so
sure.
I understand that. Now, the film festival has been going on for what?
17 years.
17 years. I remember when it started.
Yeah, it's we're in our 17th year. I would say the slate of films that we have this year, I think, might be our best ever. Which is really exciting. We have major motion pictures coming to town. The kinds of films that aren't often made, they're made, but they certainly don't come to Bloomington in any kind of way.
Exactly.
If they do, they might show at IU Cinema, right. Maybe. Mm-hmm. But these are the kinds of things that show on the festival circuit. They go to LA and Toronto and Montreal and Berlin and the big LGBTQ festivals, but they never come here. And so having the opportunity to show these films here in Bloomington is really exciting for us.
I know the film festival, when it started, showed a lot of the short films, or graduate student films, people that are in film studies and make these little short films. I went to the film festival for a few years, and I have to admit I haven't been for the last few years, but when I read in the paper, today you're in the paper. Yes, you're quoted about the film festival that's coming up next weekend, right?
This coming weekend, February 1st and 2nd.
And that you were having the film Mapplethorpe, mm-hmm. which I was trying to remember if that came to Bloomington when it opened.
Well, Mapplethorpe actually hasn't released yet.
Oh, it's a new, okay.
It's a brand new
I'm thinking
new
of another one then that is about him too.
There is a documentary, yeah, I think, right. That's available, but what we make sure is we have 21 short and feature films, 5 feature films, and we're always careful that none of these are available for distribution yet. So anything you see at the film festival, you can't see it at a theater yet.
Oh, okay.
Right, so you see it here for the first time. Particularly with the short films, they're hard to find anyway, so the short film you see at the film festival, you may never see again.
That's
because
true
it's
enough.
Simply not available anywhere else. And so, you know, the feature films eventually wind up on Netflix or Amazon, mm-hmm. But often, particularly when it comes to queer cinema, you don't know that they're there because they're poorly marketed or maybe just kind of like buried in a category. You may not find them.
Right, unless you're one of those people that is on a distribution list for lesbian films, women's films, feminist films, and then the same for men. There's a lot of gay men films out there. So I do kind of know about some of them. But I guess,
I would say those distribution lists, I think particularly for people who might be my age or younger, we don't really know about those distribution lists may not know.
Okay.
So I think, as we trend younger here, it's harder to have awareness about those kinds of things. I think some of those lists started up in a time where you needed like a compiled
That's
list
probably
to
true.
Track things down, right? And so now with the internet and everything, I don't think though I'm sure they still exist, I think people, millennials and younger, are probably not as clued in.
That's probably very true. I hadn't thought about that because I get emails from a couple of the lists, like Women Make Movies, and there's a couple others I can't remember right now, that do keep me up on the films that are out there. Mm-hmm. But when I read that there were going to be feature films here, I thought that was exciting. That's a really big step.
We've had feature films for a few years. We always make sure that we have one per block, or we strive to have one per block. This year we do have 6 screening blocks. The one block that does not have a feature will have 7 short films, and that is a Saturday matinee at 11 o'clock that is free for students with an ID. It's very kind of youth-focused. Of course, these are films for everyone, but this is absolutely a block where, you know, the more teen crowd
sure.
is able to find films that
Makes
they can
sense.
Really identify with mm-hmm. and things that are probably more appropriate for them in a lot of ways,
right.
Particularly with the content and nothing explicit, of course, and that kind of thing, and that's what we really usually show in that block. So that is not a block with a feature, in part because of the audience. Like, you know, can a 15 or 16-year-old really sit through a feature and multiple shorts in a period of time? Probably not these days. But 7, you know, 3 to 20-minute short films can keep their attention and stays exciting for them.
I would think that makes a lot of sense. I was wondering what the audience demographic is now. Because over the years, I mean, I remember when it started, and I remember the whole crowd of people that were here in Bloomington at that time. And then most of the people that I'm really aware of are like my age, and I don't know if they still attend or not.
They do, and I think our audience for the film festival does trend older. It has been, at least in my experience, less interesting or less attractive to people kind of in their 30s and younger. I think simply because we came up in a different age with different things, and you know we're generations who are happy just to watch Netflix and or maybe like go to the theater every once in a while and kind kind of go out and we're overstimulated and too connected. And so like sitting through a film festival is a bit different, I think, for some mm-hmm. people. But this runs counter to our demographic at Pride Fest in the summer, which skews quite a bit younger. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to have that balance.
I was thinking about that in terms of attention span for the younger people. When you can watch a movie on your phone right. now, we certainly didn't have that back when this film right, festival right. started. On the other hand, I watch a lot of Netflix and Amazon Prime, so I'm I do like a lot of movies.
I think though, like we're used to not just we as a younger generation, but people are now used to watching something on Netflix and looking at their phone and yes. being distracted and kind of running around.
Well, and you can pause it,
right,
and then you can go back to it,
right, exactly. and you can rewind over and over mm-hmm. again or fast forward. And so I think the film festival kind of harkens back to a time when you couldn't really do those kinds of things, and so that is a unique experience. I think that's kind of dying, and it's something that I think a lot of people don't appreciate these days.
So do you think the film festival will keep going, will continue on because of those changes?
I think it will continue as a festival, maybe not the current format. Mm-hmm. We're thinking about other ways to present the festival. Maybe it won't be one weekend once per year. Maybe we do a Saturday once every 3 months and kind of have mm-hmm. like five movies in an afternoon and come and hang out. And maybe like the films will focus on a particular subject or, you know, like a genre or something. So we can still have a festival series. It may not be in the future this one weekend in the coldest part of the year, the
yes.
darkest part of the year. We may look at doing things differently as we go forward.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I remember when Bloomington Pride started and then the film festival, they were actually separate.
Well,
and then they kind of quickly came together.
Well, Bloomington Pride sprung up out of the festival.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't separate. The nonprofit was created to support the festival, actually.
Oh, okay.
And so the festival is very much our roots. That's where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
But as the organization has grown and evolved, we've become more of a pride, like an actual pride organization. It was a bit weird to have a pride organization that didn't do any outreach or advocacy and simply
right.
showed movies. And so that's something that we take to heart and spend a lot of time on throughout the year. And so the film festival, as our foundation, is something that we're loyal to.
Mm-hmm.
But we certainly do a lot more now.
Well, I know that I used to complain a lot that Bloomington didn't actually have a Pride Festival. And I know you do now. You
yes.
have one in the fall. And
it is always the last weekend in August. It is the Saturday after classes start at IU, whenever that Saturday usually is.
Sure.
This year it's August 31st. We don't have that during June when the rest of the Pride Festivals take place, simply because Bloomington is a ghost town in June. And so
Do you really think there wouldn't be? I know that we were involved with starting Spencer Pride and co-founders of that way back. And I know that now that the people that do it are, you know, have done great things, and it's really great for a small town that size. I mean, the population of Spencer is what, like, think about 2,800 people or something. And Owen County only adds maybe another 2,000 or 3,000 to that. And yet they have a massive turnout. So I'm wondering if Bloomington would have a turnout now, because so many young people are out. Way back when, they weren't out.
Well, we get about 15,000 people at Pride Fest.
I know.
And
it's really successful.
We can't have 15,000 people in June. And so we also miss out on every college student who leaves town, faculty leave town.
True.
A lot of people simply aren't here. And so while I think having it in June is very good for Spencer, given its location,
right.
a lot of people come in from rural areas west of Owen County, and that's great there. For Bloomington, it doesn't quite work.
I think it's a good point. I've had a lot of people ask me that, saying, why did they not have it during, you know, Pride Month? And I said, well, because the students leave. And they said, well, what about local people? Well, I think local people, as you said, there wouldn't be as many. There'd still be, there'd be a turnout.
There'd be a turnout, but
not nothing like what you have.
We need or would like to have, and also we exclude an entire university community
sure.
by holding it in a month where most people are not here.
Exactly, which the university, well, Bloomington would probably be a lot like Spencer if it weren't
it
for
would.
The university.
It
so given them where it is in Indiana, but so where do you see all this headed? Like you've already talked about, you're going to probably redesign the film festival, and Do you think of other things that you might, that Pride, Bloomington Pride might do in the coming years?
One thing that we already do, we have our two events, Pride Fest and the Film Festival. I think a lot of people don't know that we have monthly community workshops with a partnership with Monroe County Public Library. We have a discussion series that focuses on a variety of topics, things that are very, what we see as important to the people in our community, particularly people who are on the margins of our margins. And so we have discussions there. We have three safe space programs: Prism Youth Community, the LGBT Aging and Caring Network, and Trans and Allies Support Community. So we are making partnerships in town. We have other alliances. We participate in Letter Writing Night for Survivors. It's a monthly gathering of local nonprofits to write letters to incarcerated survivors of sexual assault. And so we're involved in quite a number of things that keep us pretty busy.
I was going to say, I remember when several of these things were separate, like the prison writing program. And years ago, a lot of these things were started by groups of people, but then now they've all come under the heading of Bloomington Pride. And that's...
Well, no. The letter writing is not under our head. We share this partnership
with
Middleway House, Pages to Prisoners, New Leaf, New Life. So this is something, and also All Out Options, Pregnancy Resource Center. So this is something we come together as five local organizations to do. It's certainly, we co-lead this. It's not something that we're running on our own.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. But it's interesting how that's all kind of come together and in kind of a big cooperative spirit. It kind of empowers each group or each focus group in a great way. It's interesting to see all this. I was at IU starting in 81, and a lot of things happened over the years. The establishment of the GLBT office, which is now the LGBTQ+ Cultural Center, and the student outgroup that actually was pretty much responsible for bringing that center in, because they were a independent student group and were an activist group usually. They met with legislators and with head people here at IU, important people in positions of power and the decision makers, to get the office here. And the students did a lot of work, I remember. I remember that group well. I can still see their faces. I don't know where all of them are now. But so much has happened, and it's all really for the good. Mm-hmm. It really is. I remember we tried to have a Pride Fest kind of in June one year, and we had it in the park. I forget what they call that park now. It used to be the Third Street Park, which is really easy. It's like Busker Chumley something or other park or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, we had it there. We had a big turnout, a really big turnout. Probably a couple thousand people showed up. We had music and things like that, but it wasn't anything formalized. Sure. It was just a handful of us pulled that together, and we considered it a success, but it didn't have enough impetus to keep going. So it's really fascinating to see all these things that are happening. Not that you're not busy enough with between your career at IU and then what you're doing with Bloomington Pride, are there anything other things you're interested in or that you're involved with in the community?
My primary involvement is with Bloomington Pride, extracurricularly, I guess. And as that involvement, as a leader of this organization, I am involved in other initiatives as a person who is representing Pride, mm-hmm. or working with other community leaders to get things done, to advocate for things. So, yes, I'm involved in stuff. I don't know if I could call it a formal involvement in things, just discussions, mm-hmm. the kind of things you need to do, other community activists do to kind of get the ball rolling on various issues, whether it is the letter writing night to survivors, mm-hmm. or other kinds of activities in town. So I have a lot of involvement in planning or execution of those kinds of things in my capacity as the chair of our board. Also, you know, things like we care very much about the welfare of sex workers and making sure that they have, mm-hmm. resources. Sure. And are protected. So there are things that we do in the community and ally with people to make sure that those kind of needs are being met.
So. You don't mean to say there are actually sex workers in Bloomington. That's hush hush, I think. Now I was wondering about, is there still a Speakers Bureau?
I believe it is on campus, yes.
Yes. because that was something, when you're talking about how all these things interact and you sit on panels and things like that, I remember those days. And it's really interesting to see how all this has come to fruition. Different faces, younger people, but it's all, I like to think of those of us that helped lay the groundwork for all this. And it's really exciting. It really is. So now the festival is next.
It is this coming Friday and Saturday, February 1st and February 2nd. We have two screening blocks on Friday, February 1st, 7 o'clock, and then 9:30. And then Saturday we have screenings at 11 a.m., 1:30 p.m., 7 p.m., and 9:30 p.m.
Now this is also the same weekend that the LGBT alumni have all their events and people come. Do you find that conflicts with the film festival, or do they actually benefit bringing all these alums back?
We work together to make sure that people can attend both of our events. And so we partner closely with the Alumni Association to make sure that any alumni coming to town can have a full experience here.
Sure.
So their events will take place Friday from 4 to 6. Our screenings start at 7. And then on Saturday, they have another event from 4 to 6. And then our screenings start at 7. So we've worked with them to make sure that our schedules don't conflict and that people can do both and that we're promoting one another and that kind of thing, because we're very much in this together.
That's great, because I know there were discussions, there are always discussions when somebody brings up something new, that how that would conflict and take away from the film festival and that kind of thing. And I remember hearing both sides thinking, well, no, maybe they'll bring people from out of town that don't come here often or don't come back. And I would think maybe it would add to the attendance. It would help.
I'm not sure. I can't attest to how many people buy tickets because they're here for the celebration weekend, but I'm happy that they're here. Whether they come to the festival or people come and don't go to the alumni event or whatever, as long as they're here having a good time and they can celebrate who they are, I think that's great. It's wonderful if people can attend both.
It's good for Bloomington. Good for Bloomington, because those of us that went before, I'm beginning to sound older and older as I talk to you here, there were so many things that were just wrong, or that weren't available, or that weren't happening, and it was kind of like, how you have to drag people sometimes along. And it's exciting to see that this is all happening and that Bloomington is actually kind of having a better face of acceptance than what it used to have. I think there's still a lot of discrimination.
I think your mileage may vary depending on your identity and maybe your ethnicity and race, but
definitely.
But the face looks good. I think we talk a better game in Bloomington than we actually deliver.
Well, I've always said that if you have to talk about diversity, you don't have it. I came from New York City, so I just was in shock, and sometimes I still am.
No, here. I think that's fair.
Much in shock. The levels of discrimination, the northern discrimination, which is more subtle, but just as hurtful.
Yes.
In some ways harder to eliminate. I know some of us worked on that for many years. And your indication is that the work is not complete yet.
No, the work is not done. I think, particularly when you're speaking within our spectrum, white, cis, gays, and lesbians, I think, have a much easier time than everyone else.
Sure.
And so I think that creates this perception that this is a wonderfully welcoming, tolerant community, when it is for some, but it absolutely is not for others. Particularly with our trans and non-binary siblings, many do not feel safe in this city.
I can understand that.
And when they're multiply marginalized, when they're black or brown, when they have disabilities, when they're experiencing homelessness, things here get even worse for them. And so I think it's a large blind spot here that I think people don't want to acknowledge, that there actually are many challenges here for the queer community. But since it doesn't really affect the majority of people who tend to be well-moneyed and well-educated and well-funded, there is this false veneer that we have.
Oh, yeah. It's very hard to get people to step out of their comfort zone and to challenge them, and then they say, well, I'm not racist, I'm not homophobic, I don't care. Well, maybe you personally aren't, but the fact that you don't care and don't get involved and don't help,
it's just as bad.
Right.
Maybe worse.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. I know that many of us have been struggling with that for a long, long time.
Yeah. We have, as an organization, we believe in gender and social justice, and so we support Black Lives Matter, we support sex workers, we support and make sure that we're advocating for these groups and for these causes. And so we face criticism from people in the community, so we need to focus on gay things. You're not looking at things in our community. And the issue is that homelessness or racism or anything else, these are our issues. They're not independent of us. Our issues aren't just, for instance, HIV awareness, which is or same-sex marriage, which is kind of the criticisms that we get from people. There are a lot of us here who identify in a variety of ways, and there are many things to fight for. So that is a challenge I think we have here, is the lack of understanding, I think, about how many of these issues of discrimination and marginalization really affect all of us.
I think one of the things that I found most, one of the things I found disappointing in my life, there have been quite a few, in working with the civil rights movement in the 60s and 70s, and then being an ardent feminist, whatever that means now, that definition I know has changed quite a bit through the years, but supporting women's rights and the rights of everyone, was that when I became more out in the gay or queer community, was finding all the people who have been discriminated against because they are gay or lesbian or whatever, still racist.
Oh, yeah.
That just stunned me. And I thought, you know, this is many years ago. But I was young, and I thought, wow, if you've been discriminated all your life for one thing, why can you not step out of that box and realize, you know, how even more comprehensive it is for somebody of color? And I got in a lot of discussions and I've never really backed down from that. I think that's why we wanted to do this Outside View podcast, because we're not doing radio anymore and we're retired and we enjoy our retirement time
of doing what we want
when we want to.
Yeah.
But I said, we can't just sit back and not do anything. That's
sure.
not me.
Sure.
That's not us.
Yeah.
So
Racism is one of the key issues that we focus on in our monthly workshop series. So we touch on it, I think, once every quarter. We come back around to racism, and it's been a tough discussion because there are most white individuals in this town don't believe they are racist, or they think that they don't see color, which in and of itself is a racist statement. And so there are a lot of these issues, and I think there are a lot of reasons for racism within our community, and I think some of it is, I won't get into like the details of why I think this is, we could go on forever, but there are a lot of wake-up calls, I think, that need to happen with people, or it's just like, well, I don't discriminate, I accept everyone on Grindr, for instance. Like, it's this kind of stuff that you hear from people, like, I'm not a racist because I will sleep with so-and-so, and that's actually not how this works. So,
exactly.
So it's been extremely challenging and disappointing, I think.
At the same time.
Well, because we recognize this as a problem, and then we reached a point as a board where we said we have to discuss this, because there are a lot of people in our community who we hear from who aren't comfortable coming to events, or they don't come out into the community because they are different. They are Black or Latinx or Indigenous, and they don't feel comfortable there because they're stared at by people not like themselves. And so we started having these discussions, and we get a lot of pushback for it, and we get a lot of people who show up and kind of want their cookies for coming, but then are confronted with harsh questions or harsh discussion, and so it's been a tough road. But
I think one of the best ways to affect change now is the leadership in any administration, in the city, in a town, in a county, at a university, has to represent everyone. And when you only see faces that look just like a certain group, that does not help at all. We need more. I mean, the leadership, I've been saying the leadership in Bloomington, and a lot of these people are close to my age, need to step down. They need to step down. We need to change. We need young voices. I'm very excited in some ways to see some of the people that have stepped forward to run for president. I mean, heaven knows we need a different president, to say the very least. But the young voices, the young faces, yes, you know, we need that. I am more than willing, as an older person, to step out of the way and let all this new come forward. But there are some people that just don't want to give up that power, you know?
Well, I mean, when we talk about race, racism is about power. And that's all it is. Whether you're talking about classism or racism or any other ism, it's a power structure. And that's why it exists. And so, no, people don't want to give that up. What would they do then?
That's exactly
right.
You'd
be like everyone else, and that would be terrible.
Well, no, it wouldn't. You'd find out that maybe it wouldn't be. Maybe you can learn from people.
Right.
I for one, love to. Something I've noticed about Hoosiers, and people who listen to this podcast are going to know I've been really hard on Indiana and IU and everything for years, is that they don't want to change. They don't want to see a need for change. And also, you hear this whole thing about Hoosier hospitality. Hoosier hospitality is only if you look just like them. I've actually been told in this town that people didn't want me to do this or wouldn't accept me for this or that because I'm not from here. I said, well, I've been here a really long time. I've been here longer than you've been alive. So, why, you know, but I mean,
also,
I've actually
no
heard those kind of, that's right. Exactly. Or not being a Hoosier,
sure.
not looking like, you know, like I guess a Hoosier is supposed to look, except that Hoosierdom, like everywhere else in this country, is made up of all kinds of people. And they need to be in leadership positions.
Yeah, that would be great.
Absolutely.
And to be supported. I think that's an issue. There's an issue where people, marginalized persons, do step up and then no one backs them.
I know that happens.
Or they're dragged down and attacked for reasons that no one is attacking anyone else. And kind of demonized for things that aren't problems when we think about white people and like white candidates, for instance. And so that's another issue where people do try and then they're discouraged.
There's just always a double standard.
Yeah.
You know, and why don't you just admit you don't want them in there because they're black or because
right.
they're brown? It has nothing to do with, you know. I know all the things. I mean, I give, you know, Obama and Michelle, they're wonderful. They're wonderful people. Now, yeah, he's a politician. Did he do everything I like or support? No. Because politicians are just politicians
right.
and whatever. But they're still good people. And what they endured, I give them credit and nothing else, what they endured.
Yeah.
The nastiness. And I mean, I just know what some of us, not just me, but some other people here, have endured at IU and in Bloomington doing the things that we did. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine on that level of what they had to listen to and hear and how
sure.
hurtful it is.
Yeah.
And yet they survived, and they're, you know, they're, and that's what people hate about it. They survived and they're still smiling and they're still going on.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the greatest sign of change. We have to keep it going, and that's why we have this number 45 in office.
Well, if number 45, if Obama behaved the way 45 does now, he would have been impeached immediately.
I have never seen anybody in all my years. I'm trying to think. I think Franklin Roosevelt was president when I was born, I think. And I don't really remember because I was a baby, but I think he was. I've really never, and there have been some presidents I didn't like Nixon for one, and there are several for several reasons. I've never seen anybody behave or act it's just scandalous. Just scandalous. And to know that there are so many people just like him, they just don't have the money, the same money.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary.
Well, I think it's the scarier is the damage, the permanent damage it does to in our standing in the world.
Absolutely.
Because we don't turn back from this. It doesn't matter what the next election does. The world sees us in the same way because they know that a great many people think the way Trump did. Even if he didn't win a popular vote, millions of people voted for him anyway. And so the world sees that and takes note and adjusts. And
what happened then. I know, and this whole thing about immigration and immigrants, it's actually down. People don't want to come here. And I don't blame them.
Right.
I don't blame them at all.
Well, there's an impact. Even at the university, international applications are down.
Oh, yeah, I saw. Yes, I was reading about that.
And, of course,
across
a university
the country.
Like this needs international students.
Yes.
For tuition and also just to expand the horizons of anyone else who is here. It's important. So.
I know. I worked with, the last position I had was with the African Studies Program here at IU, which I enjoyed immensely, probably more than any other position I had, because I so enjoyed meeting all the people that came from Africa, the black people that came from Africa. I mean, there are some white people that come from Africa, but I enjoyed speaking with them and hearing their opinions on the world, and then how they see this country and how they see Bloomington, and then some of the things that you don't see in the paper, you don't hear about, things they experienced here that is just horrible. and they have very few people to talk to about it. Because there are services here, but almost every office you walk into at IU, now I don't know if it's still this way because I haven't been on campus for about 5 years, can't have changed that much. Almost every office you walk into are white faces, white people, and then the kind of people who will wait on you, well, you know the look. They'll wait on you, but they don't really want to.
They're not here to help you, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it just was appalling and painful to me and hurtful. I don't know. And you're right. We do look really, really bad on the world stage. But maybe it's time that America's dirty little secrets were exposed.
Yeah.
Because I've seen so many people say, well, this isn't who we are. Oh,
it's
wrong.
Exactly who
it's
we are.
Exactly who we are. That's what's been exposed. If 45's position as president has served any purpose at all, it has shown a lot of people what we really are like.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that that's not a bad thing.
No, I think it's important because I think what most Americans are seeing or what marginalized Americans have been seeing and feeling and witnessing since always. Mm-hmm. So,
see, if you have Jewish heritage, Native American heritage, you run into conflicts too now. It's not the same as being black. I know that.
No, but I think indigenous people are even worse off, facing high rates of death by police and situations on reservations and with funding and having land taken
suicide,
from them.
Suicide, alcoholism.
Like all these kinds of things. It's not like being an indigenous person is somehow easier than being black.
No.
I would say it's just as difficult, if not harder, in a lot of ways.
And they've also brought out, I mean, we've heard the anti-Semitism now again, more and more and more and more. And I mean, my family, I didn't really know them because, you know, they were over in Europe before I was born, sort of. But I lost relatives during the Holocaust, which they like to say didn't happen, just like, oh, the Civil War wasn't that bad. You know, I mean, all these excuses for everything, no. Mm-hmm. Humans do some horrible things, and we need to face it.
Yeah.
And then we need to make changes, which means we need to get people into offices and positions of power that will make change.
Right.
That will really make change, not just say they will.
I think the problem with politicians is that once they're in a position of great power, they're often compromised.
Oh, yes.
So they start out idealists, and they're going to make all these things happen, and they finally get there, and they have to trade in enough chips to get there, and then they can't get the things done that they were supposed to get done. So,
well, once you get to Washington, D.C., which is just, I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while. I love the city, but once you get there with all the lobbyists and the, oh, goodness, I couldn't even imagine putting up with that kind of pressure and then coming back home and having everybody say, you know, we elected you to do this. Well, I can't get it done. Why can't you get it done?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because of this and this and this.
Yeah.
And people don't understand. They don't want to understand. They just want your word to be good.
Right.
And it's very complex.
It is. It is. Hmm.
Well, now that we've solved the world's problems. I wish it were that easy. I really wish it were that easy. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the film festival or anything?
Sure. I just think that this is, I've said it before, and I guess I said it in the paper today, but that this is the best film festival, at least as far as a lineup goes, that we've ever had. And so, particularly in this day and age with all these issues that we speak of, watching the legal erasure of transgender people, watching everyone else being oppressed and marginalized, I would hope that this film festival, even for these 2 days, is a little bit of a break from that, and to see films that reflect your identities and possibly your experiences, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think like supporting queer cinema is valuable, because if we don't, films like this start to go away.
True.
Festivals like this go away, and then we don't see ourselves represented. We don't see rich characters anymore. Well, not even rich characters. They've been so flat and stereotypical, and now they're becoming richer characters. That stuff starts to fade, because studios don't think there is an interest, and so they don't care. And they respond to money, really, money and attention. And so I think supporting films like this is really important.
I have to admit, doesn't seem like I've heard as much about film festivals as I did maybe 10 years ago.
Generally.
Yeah. Even the Pride events have become kind of ho-hum. I mean, they're spectacular events. I kind of got prided out because we used to take the Blooming Out crew and everything and go to all the Pride festivals in the state. And it got tiring after a while because it's fun. It's for young people, mm-hmm. and it's fun. And it's important to have them. But I don't hear about them quite as much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because they've become commonplace or if people are just trying to tone down the recognition.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think they've popped up more recently in the news of just different events like shutting parades down, for instance, mm-hmm. And for good reason.
And some politicians have stepped forward to support them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which... yeah. I think an issue with Pride organizations generally, and maybe not organizations, but these festivals, is that they're no longer about the roots of what Pride is. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we as a board have tried to return to, understanding that Pride is a protest, and mm-hmm. that Pride started decades ago by trans women of color, and that's something we want to recognize and hold on to. And Pride festivals aren't all just like, it's not all like market days in Chicago. Like, it's not just
yes.
it shouldn't just be a wild party. Like, we can party and we need to celebrate,
sure.
because we're here and that's valuable. We need to be seen, but also it can be a place for community and a place for education and a place where families can come and mm-hmm. enjoy themselves. And then in the night, the families can go and then people can have
exactly.
people can cut loose. But so I think if I had a criticism of Pride Fest, and we're not perfect, I don't say that to mean that we've got it all figured out, but I think a criticism I would have of Pride festivals across the country is that they have just turned into a party and they've lost sight of mm-hmm. what they were supposed to be.
Some of them, I think that's true.
Yeah, and I mean, especially in these big cities,
mm-hmm.
In New York, in LA, and
San Francisco.
Places. Yeah, and they are not, they've just lost their roots, I think. And so I think that's something we do well. I think that's something we're very proud of. And I know there are other Pride organizations around who focus on that also in other mm-hmm. cities, and so that's really valuable. So,
well, I want to thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's been great meeting you in person and talking. And sharing thoughts and learning a little bit from one another, I hope.
Yes, absolutely.
So for our outside view, I'm Helen Harrell, and I've been speaking with Janae Cummings. And we hope you all go to the film festival.
Yes, there are senior and student discounts available at all levels of ticketing. So if cost is a barrier, please consider that.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.